Time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse.
Hello, my name is Mark Hayes, and it is my pleasure to present to you the choir and orchestra of St. Lillian, under the direction of Deborah Basile, performing my arrangement of Dan Shudi's Here I Am, Lord. I hope you enjoy it.
Calling in my heart. Hi there, Jack Socia here with you, the host of Connecting the Diocese. You know, of all of the weekends of the year that we broadcast on a Saturday and a Sunday, the two most interesting and the two most challenging for us are the ones where there is Palm Sunday and, of course, Holy Saturday and Easter Sunday. Christmas can end up on a Wednesday or a Friday, and even sometimes on a Saturday, but it moves with the calendar, where, of course, Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday are in a fixed weekend. I always want to try to do something special on these weekends to bridge the gap between Saturday and Sunday, particularly on Palm Sunday, because Saturday basically is, well, Saturday. But Palm Sunday, a whole different ballgame. And so we're going to have Bishop Callahan on in just a few minutes, really talking about a lot of different things involving Palm Sunday and the whole nature of what was going on. It wasn't all just Hosanna and palms waving. There were lots of intrigues and political things and people seeing but not really understanding and all kinds of great stuff going on. I think you'll enjoy it. You know, I was picking out some music to play because I don't want to just have all talk on Palm Sunday. And in our conversation with the bishop, which you'll be hearing in a few minutes, he bemoans the fact that for so many people, Easter is like chocolate bunnies and Easter eggs and jelly beans and, you know, that kind of thing. Well, I frequently go over to YouTube to look for music that I can find. And frequently I try to find some from churches, either local or distant. And since Easter is this earthwise international feature, we'll probably have music this weekend, next weekend, from places all over the world, because this is a universal time and a universal celebration. But the bishop mentioned that a lot of Easter has been taken away by marketing people with Easter bunnies and Easter candy and Easter baskets and you know, all this stuff that really has not a whole lot to do with the actual event. Well, I go to YouTube and I type in Easter music, and probably the first 10 items they show are people with bunny hats on jumping up and down singing Easter bunny songs. Now, granted, these were for kids, but nonetheless, it was kind of like, oh my gosh.
I said a boom, chicka boom.
I said a boom, chicka boom.
Hey, Easter bunny, chicka boom.
Hey, Easter bunny, chicka boom.
Happy Easter, chicka rocka, chicka boom.
I rest my case. He's right. So we're going to have some nice music on during this show as well, and certainly next weekend as well. The funny thing is, and I have a lot of time to sit down and plan these shows, and I listen to what the bishop says when he's talking to me, when he's recording. I listen when I'm editing again a second time, and you get to hear things that you missed even in the conversation. Essentially, if you think about it, Lent and Easter and Advent, Christmas, if you want to call it that, are flip sides of the coin. One doesn't really make sense without the other one. And so what I want to do for just a minute is read you something that really is most normally heard around Christmas or Advent. Now, this is not an Advent story, not a gospel story. As a matter of fact, it goes back a number of years, an unknown author. But way back in about 1983, 82, I think it was, I was working at a radio station in Marshfield, and part of our midday routine was we played Paul Harvey. You may remember him, you may not. But anyway, he had the rest of the story. And he read a story that, again, we don't know who the author is, that had to do with understanding what incarnation is all about. And it really struck me back then, and I remembered it all these years, more or less, but of course my version of it got much more simplified. And I dug around, and sure enough, it has become popular enough that someone has transcribed it, and it is on the internet, and so I printed it out, and I'm going to read it to you right now as the flip side, the reason why Christmas and Easter and all these things are inseparable. So here we go. The man I'm going to tell you about was not a Scrooge. He was a kind, decent, mostly good man, generous to his family and upright in his dealings with other men. But he just didn't believe in all of that incarnation stuff that the churches proclaim at Christmas time. It just didn't make sense, and he was too honest to pretend otherwise. He just couldn't swallow the Jesus story about God coming to earth as a man. He told his wife, "I'm truly sorry to distress you, but I'm not going with you to church this Christmas Eve." He said, "I would feel like a hypocrite," and that he would much rather just stay at home, but that he would wait up for them. So he stayed, and they went to the midnight service. Shortly after the family drove away in the car, snow began to fall. He went to the window to watch the flurries getting heavier and heavier, and then he went back to his fireside chair and began to read his newspaper. Minutes later, he was startled by the thudding sound, then another, and then another. At first he thought someone must be throwing snowballs against the living room window. But when he went to the front door to investigate, he found a flock of birds huddled outside miserably in the snow. They had been caught in the storm and in desperate search of shelter, for they had tried to fly through the large landscape window. That is what had been making the sound. Birds. Well, he just couldn't let the poor creatures lie there and freeze. So he remembered the barn where his children stabled their pony. That would provide a warm shelter. All he would have to do was direct the birds into the shelter. Quickly, he put on his coat and galoshes and he tramped through the deepening snow to the barn. He opened the doors wide and turned on the light so the birds would know the way in. But the birds did not come in. So he figured that food would entice them. He hurried back to the house and fetched some breadcrumbs. He sprinkled them on the snow, making a trail of breadcrumbs to the yellow-lighted, wide-open doorway of the stable. But to his dismay, the birds ignored the breadcrumbs. The birds continued to flap around helplessly in the snow. He tried catching them, but he couldn't do that. He tried shooing them into the barn by walking around and waving his arms. Instead, they scattered in every direction except the warm, lighted barn. And that's when he realized they were afraid of him. To them, he reasoned, I am strange and a terrifying creature. If only I could think of some way to let them know that they can trust me, that I'm not trying to hurt them, but I'm trying to help them. But how? Any move he made tended to frighten them and confuse them. They just would not follow. They would not be led or shooed because they feared him. He thought to himself, only I could just be a bird and mingle with them and speak their language. Then I could tell them to not be afraid. Then I could show them the way to the safe, warm barn. But I would have to be one of them so they could see and hear and understand. At that moment, the church bells began to ring. The sound reached his ears above the sound of the wind. Bells. He stood there listening to the bells, Adeste Fidelis, listening to the bells pealing the glad tidings of Christmas, and he sank to his knees in the snow. The Farmer and the Birds, author unknown. Thank you to Paul Harvey for reading that all those years ago. You know, I was thinking also about messiahs. And as you probably have heard, at the time of Jesus' life, there were all kinds of people claiming to be messiahs. And for the Jewish community, they continued after Jesus, years after, hundreds of years after. And I was looking up one thing, and I ran across a story. It was just an example that was given of this Messiah character, again, long after Jesus, who the Jewish people were considering as being a Messiah. It's a very interesting story, and it gets to show you how basically by their words and their acts, you know them. This guy was claiming he was the Messiah. He was looked upon by many as being an absolute genius. Others thought of him as being, well, mentally ill. But he said the right stuff, and of course there were always these rumors around him about things he may or may not have done. He may have performed this miracle or that miracle. And he got a big following. And as sometimes happens, when you get a great big following and they're giving you hosannas, unlike Jesus, who remained humble, it does tend to go to your head, and he really got very full of himself that he was the Messiah. He got so full of himself that he went to a neighboring country that was Islamic, and he went to the king of that country, and he said, give me your crown. I am the new Messiah. Well, the king didn't give him his crown, but the king did give him a choice. Basically, the king said, well, I'll tell you what, either you convert to Islam or we kill you. He converted to Islam. So obviously one of the traits of a Messiah is that they don't change their mind when things get tough, which we, of course, will be hearing so much about this week and next week. Well, there's a couple of things for you to think about. The nature of incarnation and what it takes to be a real Messiah. My name is Jack Socia. You are tuned to Connecting the Diocese. Like I say, I want to have a little music this weekend, let you contemplate the special events that we'll be hearing so much about these next few days, and if you're listening on Palm Sunday, even today. So just sit back and relax and think about it.
You are here, moving in now. worship you. I worship you. You are here, working in this place. I worship you. I worship you. You are waymaker, miracle worker, promise keeper, light in the darkness, my God, that is who you are. You are waymaker, miracle worker, promise keeper, light in the darkness, my God, that is who you are. You are here, touching every heart. I worship you. I worship you. You are here, healing every heart. I worship you. I worship you. You are here, turning life around. I worship you. I worship you. You are here, mending every heart. I worship you. I worship you. You are way made. Darkness, my God, that is who you are. You are waymaker, miracle worker, promise keeper, light in the darkness, my God, that is who you are. Even when I don't see in you working, even when I don't feel in you working, never stop, never stop working. You never stop, never stop working. Even when I don't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. You never stop, never stop working. You never stop, never stop working. Even when I don't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. You never stop. Never stop working. You never stop. You never stop working. Even when I don't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. You never stop. Never stop working. You never stop. 'Cause you are way making miracle work, promise keeper, light in the darkness, my God, that
a little bit of praise-style music, and why not? We've got Palm Sunday right in front of us. My name is Jack Socia, back with Bishop Callahan right after this. Well, my wife and I went out and got our booster shots, and so we are ready to roll. This is the first time in two Easters we will be actually spending Easter with other family. I have been going online checking the CDC county check, where you can put in your state and your county and whatever counties you'd be going to, and it will tell you how much COVID is going on. And right now, things are looking very, very green. Green means, you know, be careful, but still things are looking good. Yellow means if you have any underlying conditions, you might want to talk to your doctor about what precautions you should take. And of course, if it was red, well, back to the same old precautions you've been dealing with for the past couple of years. There is something coming out now that is of very, very special importance to those of you who, for whatever reason, have not been vaccinated. It's called test and treat. Basically, if you feel sick and you have managed to get to a doctor or a testing center within about 5 days or less, it's possible for them to treat you at that point, and this will reduce, it won't eliminate, but it'll reduce the severity of the COVID-19, called test and treat. You might want to look it up and read more about that. It's working its way into drugstores and things like that. It is not a panacea. It is not a substitute for doing the right thing and getting a vaccine. There is plenty of vaccine out there, and you can keep checking to see what the youngest ages are that can get it. And of course, if you're 50 or older, you can get the extra booster shot now at no charge. Also, there were reports coming from Brazil, and I believe the U of M Minnesota is coming out with their results, which are very similar, saying basically their tests of ivermectin did not show any improvement whatsoever if you got COVID-19. So despite what the cranks may still be saying, you can stick a fork in that one. It is done. If you want some help, get the shots. COVID-19 is not over, but right now, things are looking a lot better than they have been in a long time. Well, as promised, once again, here is the Bishop of the Diocese of La Crosse, Bishop William P. Callahan. Bishop, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Jack. And hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning us in. We love doing these broadcasts for you and with you, and certainly hope that they deliver what we promise, that we're going to try and give you a little bit of Lenten reflection and preparation now for Holy Week. We're so close. So thanks very much. Good to have you with us today.
As I mentioned in the introduction, there's been so much else going on in the world and in the United States, for that matter, that people have been distracted. And so, like last week, we talked about how it really isn't too late to kind of begin to prepare. It's never too late to begin to prepare. Can you tell me a little bit, maybe a lot, actually, Palm Sunday, this is part of the greatest story ever told. Can you tell us more about it?
Sure. Of course, our ancestors, when they saw Jesus, they did say, Hosanna to the Son of David. And of course, that is the living biograph, if you will, of his life. And so he is the Son of David when one of the first Gospels that we hear in Advent is the genealogy of Jesus. And of course, it is used at various times to remind us of the fact that Jesus is the Son of God. He is the Son of David. He is the Son of Mary, of course. And so the idea is that we understand that his earthly roots come from the fact that he is the Son of David. And so when we hear Hosanna to the Son of David, we are, of course, understanding the fact that the people of his time knew that Jesus was of David's line. And that, of course, meant that he truly was royalty. If he was the Son of David, he truly was the king. So they, when they saw Jesus coming into the king's city on Palm Sunday, they were eager to pay him tribute. And so they took the branches off the palm trees to wave them in the air to welcome Jesus as the Son of David, as the King of Israel, and as the king coming into the king's city, Jerusalem.
We talked last week about how it was so incongruous that no one could make up a fictional story with Jesus being born in a barn. I mean, they would never do that. And at the same time, he's not processing in on a grand elephant with gold lame all over it or something.
Not by a long shot.
He's got a donkey, right?
He comes in on a donkey. Yes, he comes in just as very humble, very, very humble.
Again, if you were making up the story to impress people, you wouldn't do this. It's just,
no,
yeah.
And it really, this is not the way to recognize the King of Kings, the Son of David, the King of Israel. No, this is the very way in which Jesus comes in, and he is very peaceful and calm, but people are taking down the palm branches, waving them in the air, spreading their cloaks on the ground as he comes in. So it's quite the contrast of this triumphal entry into Jerusalem is very much different from the way in which Jesus comes back into the city of Jerusalem on Friday, the following Friday, which of course is Good Friday. And he has been beaten, he has been pummeled, he's practically dead, walking his way up to Golgotha, to the hill of the cross.
The political scene going on back then, my understanding is limited on this, but basically, the Jews were under control of Rome.
Yes.
And there was a lot of tension, a lot of insurrection attempts. There was a lot of wariness about anybody who pops up claiming to be a leader of any kind. And so I suspect that even on Palm Sunday, some of the folks in charge were watching this very, very carefully.
Yes, and that is said in the gospel narratives, of course, for Palm Sunday. But of course, we hear one of the Passion narratives on Palm Sunday, and that is our day of pulling it together and preparing ourselves for the understanding of who Jesus is. So we're aware of the fact that the leaders of the people, the Pharisees, and all of the temple leaders are there seeing this whole thing, and they tell Jesus to silence his crowd. And Jesus, of course, says, that doesn't happen. If I told them to be quiet, the rocks and the stones themselves would start to sing and would cry out.
The other thing is also that these same people who are welcoming him in such an exuberant way are also expecting him to basically smash the chains that are binding them, the whole message he's been giving the whole time is the opposite of that.
Exactly. And because, of course, they are expecting the Messiah to come in to be the leader of the people, and that as the leader of the people, he, the King of Kings, he, David's son, all of those different sorts of titles that they're shouting out for him on Palm Sunday, they are thinking, of course, as Jesus, as the mighty fulfillment of the prophecies, and that he is coming in. They are completely clueless as to the fact that Jesus is coming in as the King of Kings, but a different kind of king than they're expecting.
Yeah, they missed totally the idea about beating your swords into plowshares.
Yes.
Loving your neighbor, forgiving.
Quite truly.
Yeah, all these things he's been saying very plainly. I mean, the Sermon on the Mount, everything he said was the opposite of what they were expecting. And it's kind of like they only saw what they wanted to see and only heard what they wanted to hear.
And that's exactly what Jesus says throughout his time of preaching and teaching the gospel, that I have come that you might understand God's love and mercy and those sorts of things. But they're not hearing it, and they certainly aren't buying it today on Palm Sunday.
How big was the Jewish population? I mean, how big a city was Jerusalem at the time? Any idea? Was it big compared to other ones?
Big by comparison, but don't forget, it was the Passover. And so there were a lot of extra people in Jerusalem at the time. So Jesus has a way of being born in the midst of the census that brought everybody in the world to Bethlehem. And Jesus is entering into Jerusalem at the time of the Passover. It is an important time. Lots of extra people, lots of visitors, lots of guests. Everybody's ready to whoop it up because it's the Passover. But now they've got an extra added attraction. Here's the guy who's the Messiah. Here's the guy who's the Son of David. here's the guy who's the head of the people. Let's do it up really big.
This is remarkable. Again, I keep thinking of this in cinematic terms. I don't know which movie would be the most accurate that has ever been produced so far, but you couldn't script something better. I mean, look what's coming. You know that right around the corner, the dark clouds are
certainly
there.
Certainly.
And what awareness did Jesus have? There, a lot of people discuss the idea of at what point or did Jesus understand who he really was? And I don't know what the arguments are in the different directions, but he had to know this was heading his way.
Certainly. Even before, I mean, he knew it even before they entered into Jerusalem. And so as the apostles came along and started to pull this all together, the apostles were overjoyed too, because they kind of stood back and said, well, here comes Jesus, and it's about time, because we've been waiting for this thing, and we've been waiting for him to reveal himself. And so they are even misunderstanding. And as the day goes through, they quite understand what's going on as this day unfolds.
As people will be heading into Holy Week, the sense of tragedy, the sense of isn't there some way to avoid this happening, is still palpable.
The irony of it is so unbelievable. You know, to know what you know about Jesus. And this is where our generation falls short. Because we know who Jesus is. We know what this is all about. We know that this is the moment, this triumphant entry into Jerusalem is the opening of the greatest drama, the greatest week of humanity. And you know, everything that we understand about Jesus is coming to fruition during this time. And we don't pay any attention to it. We just see these days, and this is the sadness of our own time, we see these days as mere reminiscences of what happened then. And, you know, and they become, for us, you know, not such a much. And that's a big problem.
Well, and as you mentioned last week, the whole time of Easter has been not taken away, but the people who like to market stuff have diluted it. So the people who are not particularly observant, shall we call them, are filled up with Easter bunnies and chocolate and eggs and all these baskets and all these things, which really doesn't have anything to do with the actual story of what's going on. I don't even know where the story of the Easter bunny came from. I mean, at least with the Santa Claus thing, there was St. Nicholas. There was some idea that you could give children a basic idea of a gift being given to you. But I don't see any connection I can make whatsoever to the entire story of Lent and Easter and the resurrection that has to do with Peter Cottontail.
And the bunny that lays eggs. So, yeah. I mean, I don't quite get it myself. But I reflect on it every year, but I can never remember it. So perhaps one of our listeners might be able to send us a note or an email or something and give us a little insight into bunnies that lay eggs and all that sort of thing.
Someday, if you have a moment, even after Easter, because things are real busy now, and we're going to get into that in a minute, but Fredericksburg, Texas has a huge Easter pageant outdoors with giant bonfires and all kinds of people dressed as bunnies hopping up and down. And I went to it one time, and it is, the only word I can use is surrealistic. But I think you could probably see it on YouTube, if not, just go to the Fredericksburg, Texas website. It is stunningly strange.
And it is still done.
Well, they were postponed because of COVID the past year, but I was just reading that it is apparently back this year. It is outdoors, but it is, I don't know where it came from.
Came from the same place where the bunnies come from.
Apparently so. Yeah, apparently so.
We just don't know.
Yeah. Now, we've got Palm Sunday. This show is being heard on Saturday and Palm Sunday. The rest of the week, can you briefly lay out what is going on? And by the way, it is a really busy time for all the priests out there and all the deacons and everybody involved. So if you've got something unimportant to talk to them about, hold off.
Hold off for a little while, yes.
Please, yes, yes, yes.
And the beauty of Holy Week is, you know, we start off in our diocese with Monday and the chance to come together to celebrate the sacrament of reconciliation. to come to confession. And in our cathedral, of course, all the priests of the deanery in La Crosse come together, and we hear confessions all day long on Monday at the cathedral. So if you're thinking about that, please double-check that time frame and come to confession. I can't begin to tell you how significant and important it is to come to confession, to have the opportunity to reflect on your life to this point. Perhaps you haven't gone since last year at Easter. This is a time to come to receive the sacrament of forgiveness, the sacrament of the change of heart, the reconciling yourself to the Savior who gave his life for you. So that usually happens on Monday. And most of the time during Holy Week, we have those times set in our parishes for a greater opportunity to go to confession and take that chance to get yourself kind of cleared up with what you think you're supposed to be doing as a Catholic, as a Catholic Christian, and what you are actually doing as a Catholic Christian. So it gives you an opportunity to change your life a little bit.
There is this great word that pops up this time of year called Triduum. Can you explain what that is?
Yes, the Triduum is the sacred 3 days. Lent itself ends at the beginning of Holy Thursday. So in the morning, the end of Lent occurs, and then in the afternoon, we start the sacred 3 days. Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and then, of course, Easter Sunday. But those 3 days give us an opportunity to think about what happened. Now, just let me back up a little bit, because in our diocese, and in many dioceses now across the country, there is an opportunity to come to what we call the Chrism Mass. And the Chrism Mass has everything to do with the sacred oil of Chrism. Chrism is the oil that is used in only three sacraments. Three sacraments. It is used in the sacrament of baptism, it is used in the sacrament of confirmation, and it is used in the sacrament of holy orders, when a priest's hands are consecrated for sacred service. So, the Chrism Mass is a Mass that is celebrated by the bishop of a diocese with as many of his priests throughout the diocese as he possibly can. And it is celebrated at the cathedral. You know, we've been trying to do it as best we can. We've moved it around a lot, but this year, our Chrism Mass is going to be back to being celebrated. We celebrate it on Tuesday of Holy Week. Typically, it is celebrated on Thursday morning, Holy Thursday morning. But it is in our diocese and in many, many dioceses, because of time and because of the fact that our priests need to get back to their parishes in order to celebrate the Holy Thursday evening Mass of the Lord's Supper, we've kind of moved the Chrism Mass around. So Chrism Mass for us is going to be celebrated on Tuesday this year at our cathedral. Now, the understanding is that three oils are blessed. One is consecrated. So the oil of the catechumens, which is the oil that is used for baptism, the oil of the sick, which is used any single time the sacrament of the sick is celebrated. Now, those two oils can be blessed by a priest. Chrism, however, used in only three sacraments, as I said earlier, chrism is consecrated. Consecrated and can only be consecrated once a year and can only be consecrated by a bishop. So he consecrates enough chrism so that it can be used throughout the diocese for all of those three sacraments, for baptism, for confirmation, and for holy orders. So whenever I go out to do a confirmation, I am using the chrism that will be consecrated on Tuesday of Holy Week, and that will be done at the Chrism Mass. So it's a good opportunity for us to understand that chrism is used as the oil that strengthens and solidifies our relationship with Jesus. So the Chrism Mass. Wednesday of Holy Week, we talk about Spy Wednesday, because the gospel itself reminds us of the fact that Judas is starting to think from the gospels. Judas is starting to look for an opportunity to betray Jesus. So we talk about Spy Wednesday. It's not a liturgical term. It's not a holy term. It's just a term for us to remember that during this week, there's a lot of intrigue going on. There's a lot of things that are going on that help us to realize that Jesus' life is in peril. And people are looking out and watching out. And the apostles are looking out and watching out and trying to figure out if they're going to catch Jesus, will they catch them? And all these other sorts of things. So the sense of drama is building. So that's Wednesday. Thursday, of course, is the Last Supper, the evening mass of the Last Supper. It is probably one of the most sentimental, filled with somber emotion, and an opportunity to come together to recognize and to realize that chrism is used to consecrate priests. Without priests, you don't have the Eucharist. That's why the chrism mass is usually celebrated on Holy Thursday, so that in the morning we celebrate the priesthood, the renewal of priestly vows, and those sorts of things. And then at night, the gift of the priesthood, the gift of Jesus himself through the priesthood, is the Eucharist. And so we celebrate the Mass. And it's hard to make it through the Mass of the Lord's Supper without thinking seriously about what was going on in Jesus' mind. What was he thinking of when he was saying to the apostles, "This is my body which is given up for you. This is my blood which is shed for you." As he is saying these things with the bread and the wine, changing them into his own body and blood, he is helping the apostles to recognize that now they are going to be the ones who are going to do this until he comes again in his glory at the end of time. So the tremendous drama is growing. And to think about Jesus giving himself in the Eucharist, changing bread and changing wine into his own body and blood, then he is also aware, and you mentioned this earlier, when is he aware of the fact that all this drama is going to find itself in his own death and his being beaten up and his being nailed to a cross? Can you imagine what must have been going on in his mind as he was consecrating, changing that bread and changing that wine into his own body and blood, as he was saying to the apostles, "This is my body, this is my blood." And that's why the Eucharist is so centered on the passion, death, and resurrection of Jesus. When we talk about the whole idea of the Paschal mystery, the resurrection of Jesus, the death of Jesus, his passion, the being chased into the garden, being arrested in the garden, being taken from the garden to the home of the head of the priests, being taken from there then to the palace of Pontius Pilate, and all of these different sorts of things that are going on. So the drama is, of course, and thanks be to God, it is all being played out for us in the scriptures. So on Palm Sunday, the Passion is read from one of the three synoptic Gospels, from Luke, Matthew, or Mark. And then on Friday, Good Friday, the Gospel, the Passion is always read from the Gospel of St. John. And it is the most complete in terms of its telling all of the details as much as John can tell. And John is a big one for telling us all the details.
A number of these events will be live streamed as well, so you should check with the Diocese of La Crosse website to find out what times they would be on and which ones will be live streamed. A lot of things are being covered. It's a busy, busy week for all of you. It really is.
Yes, and, yes.
Whatever you can do to keep all of these priests and religious and deacons and all these volunteers who are helping out, cleaning up churches, keep them in your prayers, because this is a lot of work, especially this year. We're kind of getting back into it full blown, and it's going to be a busy, busy time, but a lot of opportunities. opportunity for reflection and the beauty of it and the sorrow of it and the passion of it is the only word I can think of. You know, the one last thing I want to mention before we head out is that in the movie, The Passion of the Christ, the one thing I remember was in the agony of the garden when they come in, one of the apostles whips his sword out and he injures or cuts off the ear of a servant. And there's this marvelous scene in the movie where Jim Caviezel, the guy who played Jesus, he touches, almost without even thinking about it, he just touches the servant's ear and it's healed. The camera kind of pans away to the next thing. But here's the servant with the most unbelievable look of astonishment on his face.
Absolutely.
And I would sincerely pray that there would be something this week, not that you get your ear cut off, but that there'd be something this week that would astonish you in this whole story.
And the servant's name was Malchus, as we are told in the Passion on Good Friday. The whole sense of understanding that, you know, he comes along and understands that Jesus is no ordinary holy man. Nobody could just heal someone like that under those circumstances where you're just seeing a guy get his ear chopped off by a sword, and Jesus, in the most, as you said, in the most serene kind of way, just goes up and heals the man's ear and restores him to health. This is amazing. Only Jesus could do these sorts of things.
And without a great deal of fanfare.
That's right.
The way that they thought a Messiah would normally behave. But it's it's a great week. It's a great week we're moving into. Bishop, can you leave us? We got more to do in the show, but other things as well. But for the folks who are listening right now, could you leave us with a prayer and a blessing for this weekend?
By all means. We adore you, O Christ, and we praise you, because by your holy cross, you have redeemed the world. And may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit come upon you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Thank you, Bishop. Jack Socia here with you as we work our way through this Saturday Palm Sunday edition of Connecting the Diocese. One thing that we keep being reminded of is that a lot of things that Jesus said were simply not listened to, about, among other things, loving your enemies and basically just absolving people of the hurt they did to you and beating your swords into plowshares. Obviously, we have been seeing an awful lot of swords these past few weeks, and we don't comment on current events going on in Ukraine right now, although this past week there has been some horrendous news, simply because it's a moving situation. It changes day by day. Something I could talk about could be totally different by the time that you hear it. But all over the world, people are singing and praying and just basically trying to do everything they can to invoke a feeling of peace. When I was in college, back in 1971, I was in a chorale, and we sang Vivaldi's Gloria. It was this group of 16 of us. It was kind of a neat experience. We sang it, I believe, and it was in an old Episcopal church, and the echoes were wonderful. Now, I'm not going to play you recordings of us from 1971. I will spare you from that. But I did want to play one cut of something from Vivaldi's Gloria, which is Et in Terra Pax Hominibus, Peace on Earth. This is performed by an orchestra and chorus from Armenia, who have seen their share of troubles. I like this particular version. It is not quite as ethereal, not quite as slow. If a good choral group does it very slowly, it can sound like the Moonlight Sonata or something. This is a tiny bit faster, but it is so appropriate for this particular time. Et in terra pax hominibus. If you want to do a quick decade of a rosary or prayer while this is on, I certainly wouldn't stop you. The Armenian National Choir and Orchestra, Et in terra pax hominibus, from Vivaldi's Gloria. We'll be right back after this. As long as I mention the horrors that are going on in Ukraine, I should also mention that there are going to be all kinds of places asking for money to help the people in Ukraine. And some of them, many of them, are completely legitimate. Some of them are not legitimate. Some are bogged down in bureaucracies. Other ones are not bogged down in bureaucracies. Generally speaking, any religious organization has a very efficient system to deliver relief. I would especially recommend the Catholic Church, the Ukrainian Catholic Church in Milwaukee. If you Google Ukrainian Catholic Church Milwaukee, you'll see it on their front page is a button that you can just click on to make a donation for medical aid to Ukraine. And they even list all of the things that they buy, so you know exactly where the money is going, what it is getting. It's very nice. Ukrainian Catholic Church in Milwaukee. But you can also talk to Catholic Relief Services, Lutheran Social Services, any other people that you want. And while you're at it, don't forget the folks at home, especially the folks who are, as they say, unsheltered. We've had a miserable past few weeks with rain and cold and snow. It has not been pleasant, at least in my area, and I'm sure probably in yours as well. The folks at Catholic Charities are working overtime to help keep these people dry, keep them from getting sick, trying to deal with their various demons, drugs, alcohol, mental illness, all the things they try to work with before they can get these people with a roof over their head. So that is, of course, extremely important. And we are a week away from the annual power cutoffs. It is not too late to contact Catholic Charities, gather up your paperwork showing your income and your outgo, and they'll see if they can help keep the power on. It's one of the many things that Catholic Charities does, and all of these religious organizations are working overtime right now, so try to give them a hand. And God bless every single one of them. Well, I think I will leave you with a little bit of a bounce in our step. We have reason to be glad. We have reason to be glad. If you're listening to this show, you are among some of the luckiest people in the world. And thank God for every little good thing that happens to you this week. I'll catch you next week right here on Connecting the Diocese.
Lord, the light of your love is shining in the midst of the darkness shining. Jesus, light of the world, shine upon us. Set us free by the truth you now bring us. Shine on me. Shine.
Father's glory, blaze, spirit, blaze.